Good weekend, Africa.
Today is Friday, January 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. vows a, quote, swift and severe, unquote, united response should Russian forces cross into Ukraine.
We have been very clear throughout. If any Russian military forces move across the Ukrainian border and commit new acts of aggression against Ukraine, that will be met with a swift, severe, united response.
Frustrations grow in Mali as regional and international efforts for democracy appears to be at a dead end.
European Union officials are adamant about keeping tough sanctions in place, hoping a compromise comes sooner rather than later.
And a church stampede in Liberia's capital kills 29 people overnight. We'll have those stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. In meetings with German officials Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken told reporters that the United States and its European allies will present a united front if Russia further acts against Ukraine. Blinken, speaking alongside his German counterpart, said Moscow would be met with a, quote, swift and severe, unquote, united response should its forces cross into Ukraine. Additionally, he said Washington and his partners would work together to impose any potential sanctions and are working on a coordinated reply towards any other possible destabilizing actions Russia may take. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock called on Moscow to step back from escalating the situation with Ukraine, warning that the country faces a range of sanctions if tensions escalate further. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken.
We have been very clear throughout. If any Russian military forces move across the Ukrainian border and commit new acts of aggression against Ukraine, that will be met with a swift, severe, united response from the United States and our allies and partners. Our task is, together, through all of the work that we've been doing, to make clear the different options that President Putin actually has before him. Dialogue and diplomacy on the one hand, conflict and consequences on the other hand, to hopefully deter and dissuade him from renewing his aggression against Ukraine. All of these engagements are part of wide-ranging, ongoing consultations with our European allies and partners, more than 100 in recent weeks alone, including with Ukraine, NATO, the European Union, the OSCE, the Bucharest 9, as well as many bilateral conversations with individual countries, to ensure that we are speaking and acting together with one voice when it comes to Russia. That unity gives us strength, a strength, I might add, that Russia does not and cannot match. And we talked about the status of the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which the United States has long opposed. It's also worth noting that gas is not flowing through Nord Stream 2 yet, which means that the pipeline is leveraged for Germany, the United States, and our allies, not Russia. That's undoubtedly something that Moscow is weighing as it considers its next move, particularly given the strong statements countries have made about the serious consequences Russia will face if it commits further aggression against Ukraine.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. The presidents of Poland and Ukraine met to discuss the threat posed by Russia at a presidential residence in Poland on Thursday. Foreign Affairs Advisor Jakub Kumok said a major topic of the meeting between Poland's Andrzej Duda and Ukraine's Volodymyr Zelensky was a Russian military buildup near Ukraine's border, which posed, quote, a huge threat for a large part of the continent, unquote. Andriy Sybiha, chief of Zelensky's office, said the two presidents would also discuss energy security and their defense capabilities to make their countries more resilient. Russia has massed tens of thousands of troops on its borders with Ukraine, and Western states fear Moscow is planning a new assault on the country. President Joe Biden ends his first year in office as tensions with Russia hit a fever pitch. He warned his Russian counterpart to choose a diplomatic solution and not to invade neighboring Ukraine, a message his Secretary of State also is pushing in Kyiv this week. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
As the President of the United States spoke on the eve of his first year in office, one nation lurked not so subtly in the background.
Russia will be held accountable if it invades, and it depends on what it does. It's one thing if it's a minor incursion and then we end up having a fight about what to do and not do, et cetera. But if they actually do what they're capable of doing with the force amassed on the border, it is going to be a disaster for Russia if they further invade Ukraine, and that our allies and partners are ready to impose severe cost and significant harm on Russia and the Russian economy.
For weeks now, Russian President Vladimir Putin has massed tens of thousands of troops along the Ukrainian border, in what Ukraine and the U.S. describe as a clear threat. The two presidents spoke twice by phone in December, and last week diplomatic teams met in three European capitals to try to defuse the situation. VOA spoke with U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in Kyiv, where he met with Ukrainian leadership this week in a show of support.
We've offered Russia a clear choice, a choice between pursuing dialogue and diplomacy on the one hand, or confrontation and consequences on the other hand. And we've just been engaged in an intensive series of diplomatic engagements with Russia, directly between us through the Strategic Stability Dialogue at NATO with the NATO-Russia Council, at the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And my hope remains that Russia will pursue that diplomatic path. It's clearly preferable.
Biden's critics in Congress say he needs to be firm with Putin.
The focus now should be on stopping an invasion, not talking about what happens afterwards. What happens afterwards is not really debatable. The Russians are going to have a very good first day if they invade. After that, the sledding gets very difficult, as they have found out in other places. Occupying a country is very difficult. It's expensive in both blood and treasure. And the president said he has pointed that out to President Putin. And that's something that needs to be underscored as we go forward.
Jeremy Suri, a history professor at the University of Texas at Austin, said that Biden is taking lessons from the Cold War when it comes to communicating with Russia.
One of the lessons from the Cold War is you have to be clear where your lines are so there aren't misperceptions. And so I think it is important. He is making certain that Vladimir Putin does not underestimate the resolve of the United States, but he's also showing that the United States has limited aims. Our goal is not to bring NATO or bring Ukraine into NATO anytime soon, but we will not allow an external power to dictate the future of NATO. So I think having those clear lines is important.
So what now for the two great powers? Blinken meets Friday with his Russian counterpart for another round of diplomacy. Meanwhile, Biden says Putin can decide on his next move as Ukraine watches and waits. Anita Paul, VOA News, Washington.
Frustrations are growing in and around Mali, where regional and international efforts to speed up the interim government's transition to democracy appear to be at a dead end. Still, key players from Europe and the United States are refusing to give up, warning what is at stake goes much beyond Mali itself. More from VOA national security correspondent Jeff Seldon.
Days after thousands took to the streets of Bamako, protesting sanctions and telling the rest of the world to back off, Mali's foreign minister hammered home the message during a visit to Mauritania. Mali will not abandon dialogue, he said, but the rest of the world should take steps to better understand. Despite the military government's refusal to let go of power, EU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey, tells VOA she's confident eventually it will relent.
The pressure will be so strong that at one point they will have to come to a compromise.
For now, European Union officials are adamant about keeping tough sanctions in place, hoping a compromise comes sooner rather than later. But Mali's military rulers appear to be digging in, demanding a review of defense cooperation agreements with France and welcoming help from Russia, with reports that mercenaries from Russia's Wagner group are now on the ground, a move EU Special Representative for the Sahel, Emmanuela Del Rey, describes as a step too far.
Cannot be accepted for the risk of having a domino effect in other countries, for instance. The countries of the region, the countries of the G5 Sahel, for instance, they fear that this could be an example that might somehow give the idea of copying the situation to other countries.
The possibility that other dominoes could fall has the attention of U.S. officials, like Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Michael Gonzalez.
Despite a decade of robust international investments, the region continues to trend in the wrong direction. Armed groups continue to expand their presence as well as their capabilities and their violence.
For years, the focus has been on a military solution. U.S. and French forces especially have been conducting training and counterterrorism missions across the Sahel to beat back groups fighting under the banner of Al-Qaeda or the Islamic State. But now the focus is shifting. International military efforts are being scaled back, making room for greater focus on development and governance, something the U.S. hopes to accelerate by pursuing full membership in the Sahel Alliance, a grouping that brings together the United Nations, the World Bank, and multiple other countries. The question for analysts, like CSIS Africa Program Director Mvemba Dizolele, is will the citizens of countries like Mali buy it?
How do you promote local ownership? How do you promote local solutions if it's heavily tilted towards the internationals?
Western officials say they are hopeful despite the unabating anger by many in the region, now front and center in Mali. Jeff Selden, VOA News.
The first aid flight has landed in Tonga after an undersea volcano triggered devastating tsunami waves. A New Zealand military Hercules aircraft has brought water containers, temporary shelters, and generators. Australian planes will also deliver essential supplies. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
So far, just three fatalities have been reported after Saturday's disaster in Tonga, a South Pacific archipelago that lies about two-thirds of the way from Hawaii to New Zealand. The damage to property and infrastructure is reported to be immense, though. Aerial pictures taken by the New Zealand Air Force show several villages have been wiped out on some islands. Hundreds of volunteers and members of the Tongan Defence Force have been clearing ash and other debris from the runway at the main airport, allowing international aid to arrive. A New Zealand Hercules was the first to arrive. Satellite communications have been restored, but other telephone and internet networks could take up to a month to repair because of damage to an undersea communications cable. Rachel Moore is Australia's High Commissioner to Tonga. Speaking from the archipelago, she gave an assessment of the impact of the disaster to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
These places are devastated. They're described as a moonscape, and you might have seen some photos of that. So the fact that the Tongan government was able to support the people and the Tongan people knew what to do in the case of a tsunami has meant that the loss of life and the number of serious injuries is small, but the loss to property is catastrophic.
Two New Zealand Navy ships are due to arrive Friday, carrying water and other essential supplies, as well as engineers and helicopters. Distributing supplies is further complicated by the need to maintain COVID-19 protocols. Tonga has recorded just a single case of coronavirus. Tongan and New Zealand officials have been working out how foreign assistance can be delivered in a contactless way. Tonga has an estimated population of 100,000. There are large expatriate communities in Australia and New Zealand. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Liberia's Deputy Information Minister told State Radio that a stampede at a church gathering in Liberia's capital Monrovia killed 29 people overnight Thursday. Soraya Lee of Reuters reports.
A little boy screamed to me.
A large rush of people at a church gathering in Liberia's capital Monrovia has left at least 29 people dead overnight into Thursday, according to authorities. Video obtained by Reuters showed discarded shoes scattered on the floor near the incident, around people mourning and wailing. One resident who attended the event told Reuters the crush began after a group of armed men rushed the crowd in an attempt to stage a robbery. Bands of Liberian street gangs known as Zogos commonly commit robberies with machetes and other small weapons. Police spokesman Moses Carter declined to comment on what caused the incident. He said an investigation is underway. The Deputy Information Minister told State Radio that the incident occurred during an all-night Christian worship event. President George Weah visited the site on Thursday. He declared a three-day period of national mourning, and his office said the Liberian Red Cross and Disaster Management Agency had been called in to assist victims.
That's Soraya Lee of Reuters. In other news, a long-awaited report on section abuse in Germany's Munich diocese has faltered retired Pope Benedict XVI's handling of cases when he was archbishop in the 1970s and 1980s. the law firm that drew up the report said that Benedict strongly denies any wrongdoing. The report also calls the current Archbishop a prominent ally of Pope Francis in two cases. The Archdiocese commissioned a report from law firm Vespa Spiker Basso nearly 2 years ago with a mandate to look into abuse between 1945 and 2019 and whether church officials handled allegations correctly. The report released Thursday said there were four cases in which Benedict, then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, could be accused of misconduct. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. The World Health Organization reports a significant drop in the number of new cases of COVID-19 in Africa for the first time since the Omicron variant began widely circulating on the continent 2 months ago. Lisa Schneider reports for VOA from Geneva.
The coronavirus pandemic has infected nearly 10.5 million people in Africa and killed more than 234,000. World Health Organization officials say the latest figures reflect a 20% drop in coronavirus cases in the week up to January 16 and an 8% dip in deaths. While the fourth Omicron-fueled wave appears to have peaked, WHO Regional Director for Africa, Matshidiso Moeti, says the continent is not yet out of the pandemic woods. She says further monitoring is needed to determine whether the trend will be sustained.
However, while four sub-regions reported a fall in new cases, we're closely monitoring the situation in North Africa, where cases spiked by 55%, and Tunisia and Morocco have both seen an exponential increase, overtaking South Africa as the countries with the most cases on the continent.
The highly transmissible Omicron variant triggered a sharp surge in the number of cases, but the severity of disease appears to be milder than that of previous strains. Nevertheless, Moeti says the continent has not yet turned the tide on the pandemic. She says there is no room for complacency. She warns further pandemic waves are inevitable as long as the virus continues to circulate. She notes Africa remains particularly vulnerable because of its unequal access to life-saving vaccines. She says Africa faces similar impediments in gaining access to a full range of COVID-19 treatments. The WHO has approved 11 therapeutics that can be used to treat COVID-19. It currently is reviewing the data on two oral antivirals, which have shown promising results in reducing the risk of hospitalization in some patients. WHO Regional Director Moeti says she fears Africa once again may lose out in gaining access to those treatments because of their limited availability and high cost. For example, she notes two effective antibody treatments cost between $550 and $1,220 for a single dose.
The deep inequity that left Africa at the back of the queue for vaccines must not be repeated with life-saving treatments. Universal access to diagnostics, vaccines, and therapeutics will pave the shortest path to the end of this pandemic.
Moeti warns nations to prepare for the appearance of other transmissible, possibly more virulent strains of the coronavirus. She says the coronavirus will continue to mutate and pose an ongoing threat to nations if the inequitable distribution of life-saving vaccines and therapeutics between rich and poor countries is maintained. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Beijing has been exporting traditional Chinese medicine around the world, including to Africa. With claims of helping with the COVID-19 pandemic, these herbal medicines are welcomed by some, while others raise concerns about the effectiveness and the lack of regulation. Victoria Munga reports from Nairobi.
My life now is not that productive, so maybe...
85-year-old Heng Pal Singh is among dozens of patients with daily appointments at the Oriental Chinese Herbal Clinic in Nairobi. Singh has been suffering from spinal problems for 5 years and is now trying treatment at the clinic.
There is a slight difference, but I was telling him that it's only a week now. He says it'll take at least maybe another at least 12 to 15 sessions, and then we'll see how it goes.
Traditional Chinese medicine is becoming more popular in Africa, according to a 2020 study by Development Reimagined, a Beijing-based international consulting firm. A July article in Beijing's official China Daily said such traditional medicine will boost the Chinese economy, contribute to global health, and prove to be a shot in the arm for China's soft power. Conventional medical doctors such as Sultan Matenechere, though, say patients are overlooking the potential harm that some herbal remedies can cause, especially if used too frequently or at too high a dosage.
They do work in quite a number of circumstances. Now, having said that, our main worry as practitioners, the medical practitioners, is that, the use of herbal medicine is not as regulated as we would want it to be.
Although the safety and effectiveness of traditional Chinese medicine is still debated worldwide, herbal practitioners such as Li Shuang continue to gain popularity among those seeking alternative medication. Li claims some of his patients are benefiting from purported COVID-19 remedies, although there is scant scientific evidence that they can help against the disease.
Many people buy herbs to prevent COVID-19. The results are good.
Environmentalists fear the growth of traditional Chinese medicine will encourage poachers to go after endangered wildlife, such as rhinos and some types of snakes used in making the potions. Daniel Wanjuki, an environmentalist and the lead expert at Kenya's National Environment Management Authority, explains why.
The rhino in Kenya is actually one of the good examples. With people saying that the rhino horn to be used as an aphrodisiac, this has led to almost complete annihilation of the rhino species in Kenya and in Africa in general.
Kenya spends an estimated $2.7 billion each year on healthcare, according to national statistics. Kenyan economist Ken Gichinga says herbal medicine could significantly lower African medical expenses if proven effective.
Africans spend quite a bit of money traveling to countries like us, such as India, the UAE, to get treatment. So if this can provide more natural, more cost-effective healthcare, because cost effectiveness is a big reason of why people choose different types of healthcare.
In 2021, Kenya's national drug regulator, the Pharmacy and Poisons Board, approved the sale of Chinese herbal health products in the country. Practitioners like Li hope that more nations will give approval to Chinese herbal medicine in the future. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
A new study says that over 1.2 million people are dying every year from bacterial infections that are resistant to antibiotics. That makes multi-resistant bacteria far deadlier than HIV/AIDS or malaria. Harry Ridwell reports.
Typhoid fever is a growing problem in many developing countries, including in Pakistan, fueled by a strain of the bacterium that is resistant to antibiotics. It can cause a high fever, diarrhea, vomiting, and death. A recent study in Nairobi revealed a dramatic increase in drug-resistant strains. It is just one example of a disease that is making a comeback. The largest multinational study of its kind shows that across the world, an estimated 1.27 million people died directly from infections caused by bacteria resistant to multiple antibiotics.
It is estimated that if we don't find alternatives by 2050, millions of lives will be lost and there will be $100 trillion lost output.
The study, published in The Lancet and led by the University of Washington, analyzed data from 204 countries. Poorer nations are worst hit by antibiotic resistance, especially sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. Most deaths were caused by respiratory or blood infections. Scientists say the misuse of antibiotics over decades has encouraged microorganisms to evolve into superbugs. Again, Dr. Antonia Sagona.
For example, people have viral infections and they have been prescribed antibiotics for very many years now. And this, over the years, has made the problem very severe. So the bacteria have become really resistant to these antibiotics.
The World Health Organization has warned that none of the 43 antibiotics in development or recently approved were enough to combat antimicrobial resistance. So what can be done? Sagona, along with scientists around the world, are working on new treatments called phages. Again, Dr. Antonia Sagona.
These are viruses that can specifically target bacteria, and they can be used in combination with antibiotics or on their own to clear bacterial infections of multi-resistant strains.
Despite the promising new treatments, scientists say it's vital that existing antibiotics are not overused to help slow down the development of the ever deadlier superbugs. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
A pristine coral reef unblemished by warming oceans have been found off Tahiti, giving scientists hope that there may be some unspoiled reefs in our oceans. Louisa Knox of Reuters reports.
Scientists have discovered a nearly 2-mile-long coral reef off the coast of Tahiti. It's in pristine condition, at a depth of over 30 metres. Thought to be deep enough to protect it from the bleaching effects of warming ocean waters. The unusual discovery gives scientists hope that there may be more unspoilt reefs to be found in our oceans. Julian Barbiera is the head of marine policy at UNESCO.
You know, generally coral reefs are found up to 25 meters in tropical systems, so it's quite impressive to find a such system in a very good state of health at that sort of depth. So the type of coral reefs that were found are from the foliaceous type, which basically means leaf-like in Latin. And if you look at the images, it's basically a field of huge flowers, coral garden in a way. Some of them looks like roses. Some of them are 2 meters wide.
The reef was found in what is known as the twilight zone off Tahiti's coast, an area where there is still enough light for coral to grow and reproduce, but deep enough to avoid bleaching, a stress response triggered by warming waters, which causes corals to lose their colour and struggle to survive. Perhaps the most famous, Australia's Great Barrier Reef, has suffered severe bleaching to an estimated 80% of its corals since 2016.
I think what's important is it also raises the issue of how coral reefs become more resilient to climate change, because climate change is the main aspects that are impacting coral reefs. We also have pollution and overfishing, which comes on that. But certainly that gives us hope that there might be other ecosystems that we have not found in the ocean, particularly this type of coral reef at this kind of depth.
That's Louisa Knox of Reuters.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken travels to Kiev this week to reinforce the U.S. commitment to Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity as tension continues over the Russian troop buildup along the Russia-Ukraine border. Join us for Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Next up, an update on Africa. What is the status of talks to de-escalate and end the civil war in Ethiopia? Can the West exert sufficient pressure on Sudan's military to return to a democratic transition? And how can the AU and regional states effectively combat and suppress the uptick in terrorism in the Sahel? That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series. Education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Ofor in Washington, wishing you a great weekend.
This is The Voice
of America. Washington, ba-ba-ba-zip.